searching for light in the darkness of insanity. I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is the only pain hatred and misery? And each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I wanna know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Oh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? My spirit gets so downhearted sometimes. So where I'd have strong and who I'd have trusted, and where is the harmony, sweet harmony? 'Cause each time I feel it slip away, just makes me wanna cry. What's so funny about
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting cams, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Ah, all right, I'm here. Hi, welcome to a Wednesday. I don't have anything pithy or funny or clever to say other than this world has gone fucking insane. You know, yesterday at Showtime, we knew that there was a chemical weapons attack in Syria. Yeah, Bashar al-Assad gassed his people yet again. But I didn't know how truly horrible it was, because, you know, in the hours leading up to the show, I'm sort of engulfed in show prep. I put together the What's News segment, and that takes hours, and show prep. And so I'm not in front of the television or the live pictures, and I'm a few hours behind in the news. But over the last 24 hours, it's become abundantly clear what happened. And the only thing worse, well, I can't even say it's worse. The thing that makes this even so much worse than it already is the fact that Donald Trump is, I still can't say it, the president of the United States. He is so in over his head. He is so out of his league. He is so totally unfit and unqualified for this job that it's just frightening. In addition to all this stuff, and I'll play you a few of his comments from the ceremony, the press conference he had in the Rose Garden today, where it makes me want to puke, literally puke. I mean, I'm not just speaking figuratively. I'm speaking literally, as we're not supposed to take the president's words literally, right? But take me literally. Every time I look at the man, I throw up in my mouth a little bit. Everything about him turns my stomach, to the point where he did an interview today with the New York Times, or maybe he did it yesterday. It was printed today, in which he attacked Susan Rice, former national security advisor, who, by the way, was doing her job and asking for one, count them, one American citizen name to be unmasked as she's reading the intelligence on this collection of data, as is her job. It is her job. Unmasking doesn't mean leaking. Unmasking doesn't mean spreading it around. Unmasking means she knows who she's reading about. It was her job. She has every right to know who it was. It's the course of normal business for that position, but this White House wouldn't know what normal business is because they have nobody qualified to be in the positions they hold. So Donald Trump, in this New York Times interview, attacks Susan Rice as committing a crime, once again, of course, presenting no evidence to back up his ridiculous assertion. He just makes these claims because he's the president. And in the same article, in the same interview, he goes on to talk about Bill O'Reilly, who has already admitted to paying out over $13 million in settlements to women who have come forth to say he sexually harassed them on the job. He paid out $13 million of his own money, ostensibly, he says, to protect his children. I promise you, his children would rather have the $13 million of inheritance. Speaking as a former child, really. These people lie. And Trump says, well, he didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, because Trump is a serial sexual harasser, assaulter, pussy grabber, if you will. So, of course, he doesn't think O'Reilly did anything wrong because he doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. How did we get here? I don't know. I guess if you're looking for good news... There's a little bit of it. Steve Bannon is officially off the National Security Council. Now, the thing is, he still gets to sit in on the meetings. There's one formality that he's not part of. But guess what? It cleared the way for someone else to take that spot. Rick Perry, the doofus from Texas. You know, the only person in Texas dumber than George W. Bush, Rick Perry. And he now sits on the National Security Council. I can't make this shit up. I couldn't if I tried. But there was good news. Last night, when, believe it or not, AT&T called my phone at 12:30 in the morning because they've been overcharging us for our DirecTV for months, it seems. And so David, my husband, was on the case yesterday, and he goes, right now every penny counts, and trying to work it out with them. And so they escalated the issue. And the idiot from the Philippines called at 12:30 in the morning because she had no idea what fucking time it was. So then I was up for a couple of hours. And while I was up, I went on the Twitter and I saw somebody tweeting that Jeff Merkley was on the Senate floor and he was filibustering. Well, not really filibustering. What he was doing was talking. Here's how it started.
I rise to address the nomination of Neil Gorsuch. And I'll start by noting that just moments ago, the majority leader was on the floor and did something that has never before been done in U.S. history. And that is, on the first day, indeed the first hours of debate on a Supreme Court justice on this floor, the majority leader filed a petition called a cloture petition to close debate. So here we are on the first day, just hours into debate, and the majority leader said, enough. We don't want to hear any more about this topic. We're going to shut down debate. Now, the rules provide some protection for this, and that is it can't be voted on until Thursday. So there's time between now and Thursday for us to air our views. But historically, often debates went on for a substantial amount of time, a week, some for many weeks, with no cloture petition being filed, yep. No closing the debate, nope. And certainly never before has the majority leader shut down debate, filed that petition on day one, trying to ram this nomination through. Well, this is just a continuation of firsts. First events that do absolutely no credit to this institution, no credit to the Supreme Court, no credit to our nation. In fact, pose a substantial, substantial danger.
You know, never before. Here's the point that we need to make. The Republicans are so good at spinning things upside down. This is why I'm always talking about being an opposite world. They've gone on and on about how never before in the history of this institution has anybody filibustered a Supreme Court nominee. First of all, the filibuster exists, so it's available for them to use. That's number one. Second of all, those fuckers on the right side of the aisle have spent the last 8 years filibustering every single one of Barack Obama's judicial picks so that the Democrats had to do away with the filibuster for the lower courts, right? And for cabinet level appointees because Obama couldn't get anybody through. But they totally and conveniently ignore that fact, those facts, and lie about everything else. So Jeff Merkley, and I apologize for how choppy that clip sounded because, Jeff Merkley spoke for over 12 hours last night. Over 12 hours. And that's how he spoke. So for time's sake, I didn't edit any words out. I just tightened it up. Right. I tightened it so that it wouldn't take, 45 minutes to get through a 30-second statement. Right. So, I was actually he wrapped it up. It wasn't really a filibuster because he hit the floor last night about 6:45 Eastern and he spoke until it was like 10:15 this morning. So he went for a long time. This is how he ended. I happened to be sitting here in front of the computer this morning at about 10:15 when he finished. And again, I apologize for the choppiness of it, but he makes some really good points here, sort of summing up what he spoke about for the previous so many hours. And here it was.
We are facing three very significant problems. The first problem is that for the first time in history, we are considering a nominee for a stolen Supreme Court seat. And that alone should be reason for everyone who cares about this institution to turn down this nominee and to convey to the president that the only legitimate nominee for this open seat is Merrick Garland. Because as a Senate, we have a stake in the legitimacy of our work and that of the court. And to confirm anyone but Merrick Garland to this seat confirms the Senate as the thief who took the seat for the first time in U.S. history and transported to another president in an effort to pack the court. And furthermore, if there is a person confirmed to this seat other than Merrick Garland, it casts a shadow over every 5-4 decision that individual participates in the years to come. It destroys the public credibility of the position. It makes the Supreme Court simply into a political body to which clever campaign tactics have delivered a majority for one ideological vision over another. Let us not enter into that position of destroying the credibility of the Senate process and the integrity of the court in one fell swoop. And second of all, we should not be considering a nominee from a president who is under investigation for conspiring with Russia to change the outcome of an election. Now, we don't know where those investigations will lead, but what we do know is this places a big cloud over the legitimacy of him holding the office. Let us clear up that cloud. Let us answer the questions that have been raised when a week ago Monday, FBI Director Comey came to Capitol Hill to talk to the House and say, yes, those investigations are underway. And we know what the diabolical practices of the Russians were. We know that they created fake news. We know that they had a team of roughly 1,000 people sending out contrived social media messages to comment on the events of the day to make it look like American citizens were commenting and to make one candidate look very good and the other candidate look very bad. And finally, this is an extreme nominee from the far right who doesn't believe in the fundamental vision of we the people and makes decision after decision through tortured, twisted, contrived arguments defined for the powerful over the people, and that is unacceptable. Thank you, Mr. President.
And that's how he wrapped it up after so many hours. I thought it was, he started around 6:45 last night. I thought he just spoke for 12 hours and 25. So my math is off somewhere. But again, Jeff Merkley, you know what? He deserves, sorry, I'm a little off here. He deserves a round of applause. You know, he did, it wasn't like anybody else stepped in to help him so he could rest his voice or anything. He really covered it all, and then he wrapped it all up for us in 2.5 minutes at the end. Good on him. There are many reasons why the Democrats are filibustering Neil Gorsuch. Many good reasons. And I'm glad, frankly, that they're standing their ground, so to speak. Not that it'll do any good, but you know what? Let them use the nuclear option. You had John McCain. Oh, did I pull this clip? I didn't get to use this in What's News today. John McCain. Here's John McCain. Now, remember, yesterday, I played you this clip. This is John McCain from October of 2016 talking about after the Republicans said they would not even give Merrick Garland a hearing. John McCain then said, and if Hillary Clinton's elected, we're not going to confirm any of her picks either.
I promise you that we will be united against any Supreme Court nominee that Hillary Clinton, if she were president, would put up.
Okay, so he made that very abundantly clear, clearer than others. Ted Cruz said it in a print interview. I played for you also yesterday. Richard Burr, who is the Republican chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, saying a similar thing. A number of them hinted at it. Some of them were a little brighter not to actually have those words on the record. But now Mitch McConnell saying, those Democrats, they're giving us no choice but to, you know, do the nuclear option. Sorry, that's how a turtle speaks, I guess. Yeah, I'll just play the clip.
After 200 years, at least 100 years of this tradition where the Senate has functioned pretty well, they think it'd be a good idea to blow it up.
There's some that say
idiot.
That,
yeah. No, whoever says that is a stupid idiot who has not been here and seen what I've been through and how we were able to avoid that on several occasions. And they're stupid and
they're
stupid. And they've deceived their voters because
they're
so
idiots.
Stupid.
They're stupid idiots. You know, as I say all the time about this administration and these Republicans, it's the I'm rubber, you're glue way of doing government. Yeah, everything I say bounces off me and sticks to you. That's it. So John McCain's admitting he's a stupid idiot. Really? What are you, 12? I guess it's in keeping with, you know, the president. Stupid idiot. You're a stupid idiot. No, you're a stupid idiot. But, you know, while we were waiting for Dump to actually speak about what the atrocities that went on in Syria 24 hours or so ago, they released a statement that put the blame on Obama. I kid you not, put the blame on Obama for this. Dump had his first Rose Garden event today with King Abdullah of Jordan. So they actually did a bit of a press conference, which I did not get to see live. Had to take my kid to the doctor this morning and, of course, do What's News and all that. I was waiting on What's News to try to get a Trump clip into it, and I didn't have time. And as soon as I finished and put What's News to bed, as they say, the clips surfaced. So first, here's Trump talking about the attack.
The king has been a leader in calling for a plan to defeat ISIS.
Let me restate that. Reading from his prepared statement about the attack, and oh my God, you know, just on the surface, say what you will about Obama, at least he was a good speechifier. He could read. He was a good reader and a good speaker, and he had command of the language. Trump is none of those things. And so, you know, yeah, listen to what he's saying because it's disturbing. But listen to how he's saying it because it's also disturbing.
The king has been a leader in calling for a plan to defeat ISIS once and for all. And I'm with you on that. We're both leaders on that, believe me. That's what we speak about today, and that is what we are going to do.
What?
And it'll be a shorter fight than a lot of people are thinking about,
what
believe me.
Fuck?
We've made tremendous strides, as we discussed. As you know, we had a very, very fine delegation come over from Egypt and also from Iraq. And they said more has been done in the last 6 weeks than has been done in years with the
right.
previous administration. And believe me, we're going to keep it that way.
He said, believe me, at least three times in that, you know, what, 45-second clip. But here, in response to a question from the gathered reporters, he had to go after Obama again. Ah, hold on. Ah,
the Obama administration had a great...
I'm sorry. Here, let's start again. Sorry. I think. Uh-oh. Now it doesn't want to play at all. Oh, no. I have sound misfire. Hold on. I bet I have it up here. Give me 1 second. I got to find it in my... Here it is. Okay. Here, let me play it from this place.
Well, I think the Obama administration had a great opportunity to solve this crisis a long time ago when he said the red line in the sand. And when he didn't cross...
No, he said a red line. There's either a red line or there's a line in the sand. It wasn't a red line in the sand, you fucking moron, but, you know, I digress.
When he said the red line in the sand. And when he didn't cross that line after making the threat, I think that set us back a long ways, not only in Syria, but in many other parts of the world, because it was a blank threat. I think it was something that was not one of our better days as a country. I now have responsibility, and I will have that responsibility and carry it very proudly. I will tell you that. It is now my responsibility. It was a great opportunity missed.
Carry it very proudly? He just has no clue what this responsibility means. Not one clue. He also said he was asked, and I couldn't find this clip. He was asked about, let me just read to you from Vox, all right, because they sort of put it all into context here. During a Wednesday press conference, President Dump gave some uncharacteristically harsh comments about Bashar al-Assad's government in Syria. The president claimed Assad's gas attack on Tuesday, which killed at least 74 people, quote, had a big impact on me. And that, quote, it's very possible that my attitude towards Syria and Assad has changed. Oh, my God, because he did something that he did 3 years ago again. He didn't realize that he was capable of this. Anyway, then he said it crossed a lot of lines for me. I guess he was asked, did this cross a line? It crossed a lot of lines for me. He told reporters at the White House, when you kill innocent children, innocent babies, little babies with a chemical gas that is so lethal, people were shocked to hear what gas it was. That crosses many, many lines beyond a red line, many, many lines. Oh, my God. You know, to take a horrific event like this and make me cringe over the fucking words he uses, I don't even know where to go with that. Oh my God, we still have like, you know, 3 years and 10 months to go. Oy. All right. Well, it's not only we here in the U.S. who are freaking out over all this. We've got some friends across the pond in the U.K. and our friend Dennis Campbell, publisher of UK Progressive Magazine and one of the hosts of the Three Muckrakers podcast, is with us. We're going to listen to today's What's News and come back with Dennis Campbell to talk about the larger world issues next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Just a few days ago, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley both signaled a change in U.S. policy towards Syria and Assad, asserting,
I think the status and the longer-term status of President Assad will be decided by the Syrian people.
So that's what Tillerson sounds like. But what's he saying? Maybe Nikki Haley can clarify.
I'm not going to go back into should Assad be in or out. Been there, done that, right, in terms of what the U.S. has done.
Been there, done that? She really said that?
When you have a leader who will go so far as use chemical weapons on their own people, you have to wonder if that's somebody you can even work with.
You have to wonder if that's somebody you could even work with? Hell no, you don't. On Tuesday, this happened.
Around 6:37 in the morning, an explosion happened in the center of a small town in Idlib province, which is not very far from the Turkish border. People immediately started to feel the effects of what they described as a poison gas, foaming at the mouth. People were in paralysis. They described the same kind of effects that would be consistent with a nerve agent. Their pupils turning into pinpoints, muscles, convulsion, heavy sweating. Some people were clearly struggling to breathe. Many died on the spot, and the death toll now is at least 70. Some put the death toll at higher than that, with several hundred people impacted.
What a difference a few days and another chemical attack on the Syrian people makes. Nikki Haley was singing a different tune at the UN on Wednesday morning.
We know that if nothing is done, these attacks will continue. Assad has no incentive to stop using chemical weapons as long as Russia continues to protect his regime from consequences. I implore my colleagues to take a hard look at their words in this council. Assad, Russia, and Iran have no interest in peace. The illegitimate Syrian government, led by a man with no conscience, has committed untold atrocities against his people for more than 6 years. Assad has made it clear that he doesn't want to take part in a meaningful political process. Iran has reinforced Assad's military, and Russia has shielded Assad from UN sanctions. If Russia has the influence in Syria that it claims to have, we need to see them use it. We need to see them put an end to these horrific acts. How many more children have to die before Russia cares?
As for Rex Tillerson, as the reports were coming in, he shook hands with Jordan's King Abdullah for the cameras, but ignored the questions being asked by reporters, leaving it to a senior State Department official saying on background that the attack was, quote, reprehensible. A few hours later, his office released a statement calling on Russia and Iran, quote, to exercise their influence over the Syrian regime and to guarantee that this sort of horrific attack never happens again. Going further up the administration's food chain, a prepared statement from the president blamed Assad and former President Obama. Meanwhile, some Twitter sleuthing turned up at least four Trump tweets in which he implored the then president not to attack Syria. Meanwhile, in opposite world, the 45th president on Wednesday in a New York Times interview attacked former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, suggesting she committed a crime without citing any evidence, and defended Fox so-called news host Bill O'Reilly, who's paid out over $13 million to settle sexual harassment lawsuits, as a good person.
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
All night long, I was alone. And finally, it was a very long Tuesday night, Wednesday morning for Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, who held the floor for over 12 hours to explain why he joined in the filibuster of Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court before turning the floor back over to Mitch McConnell, who went on as if nothing had happened.
For the first time in history, we are considering a nominee for a stolen Supreme Court seat. And that alone should be reason for everyone who cares about this institution to turn down this nominee. If there is a person confirmed to this seat other than Merrick Garland, it casts a shadow over every 5-4 decision that individual participates in the years to come. It destroys the public credibility of the position. It makes the Supreme Court simply into a political body to which clever campaign tactics have delivered a majority for one ideological vision over another. Second of all, we should not be considering a nominee from a president who is under investigation for conspiring with Russia to change the outcome of an election. Now, we don't know where those investigations will lead, but what we do know is this places a big cloud over the legitimacy of him holding the office. And finally, this is an extreme nominee from the far right who doesn't believe in the fundamental vision of we the people and makes decision after decision through tortured, twisted, contrived arguments to find for the powerful over the people, and that is unacceptable. Thank you, Mr. President.
If you appreciate these What's News segments, I hope you'll consider a donation to the Nicole Sandler Show, which allows us to keep doing what we do. Visit NicoleSandler.com/donate for more info on how you can help.
And that's today's dose of Nicole Sandler's What's News. Hear Nicole's show Tuesday through Friday from 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. You'll get all the regular shows and have access to the new Monday Music Show podcast and The Vault at NicoleSandler.com, plus bonus content. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler, just about a week or so ago, this happened across the pond.
British Prime Minister Theresa May at last firing the starting gun for Brexit on Wednesday. Her letter to Brussels, delivered at lunchtime by the British ambassador to the EU, Tim Barrow, that officially launches the UK's withdrawal from the European Union under Article 50.
We are going to take control of the things that matter most to us, and we are going to take this opportunity to build a stronger, fairer Britain, a country that our children and grandchildren are proud to call home. Last night, the bill on Article 50 successfully completed its passage through both houses. It will now proceed to royal assent in the coming days, so we remain on track with the timetable I set out 6 months ago. And I will return to this House before the end of this month to notify when I have formally triggered Article 50 and begun the process through which the United Kingdom will leave the European Union. This will be a defining moment for our whole country, as we begin to forge a new relationship with Europe and a new role for ourselves in the world. We will be a strong, self-governing, global Britain.
I love listening to British Parliament, but just for the grumbles from the Parliament as somebody is speaking, the giggle that you heard, I don't know that I'd characterize it as a giggle, the laugh was Dennis Campbell's. He is the publisher of UK Progressive Magazine. He's one of the three muckrakers of the Three Muckrakers podcast. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Nicole. How are you?
I'm not sure. I really, you know, not well. How are you?
About the same. I mean, I don't know. I think we did it first a year ago with the referendum that started this whole thing. And then nobody here thought that anybody would vote to leave the European Union, that they would be stupid enough to do so. And then once they did, nobody thought they'd actually go through with it. But here we are.
Right. Well, you know, I remember how shocked we were here when the Brexit vote happened and the people in the UK voted to to leave the European Union. You know, the same as when Trump was elected, nobody really thought it was going to happen. But they both did.
Yeah, it's truly an insane period. And I think on both sides of the pond, we can say that the inmates are running the asylum. You know, literally just days after the Westminster terror attack and things were starting to get back to normal, she went before the House of Commons and basically said that the Article 50 was about to happen. Now, Article 50 is a 133-word bill. There was no chance to put any amendments to it. There was no chance to really fight it. They've jammed this through right from the very beginning, right to the end. The House of Lords, at the beginning part of it, said, well, we were going to put protections in for people from the European Union already living here because it's not fair and we want our people to be treated the same way. All of that got stripped out of the bill, and now this 133-word abomination has gone forward, and a 6-page letter was delivered to the head of the European Union, the European Union President, Donald Tusk. And you know, both of them had press conferences, and in our last podcast, you know, we kind of spliced the two together, as well as the Labour Party's opposition to it all. And it was very Kafkaesque to watch this whole thing unfurl. And then on Friday, reality hit, because Donald Tusk came back. He said, look, I'm going to go and I'm going to talk with the other 27 members of the European Union, and we will have a press conference on Friday morning. And on Friday morning, after basically 6 weeks of you know, Britain saying, and we want this, and we want that, and we will make certain we have this and that, we entitled our last podcast, And We Want a Pony, because it was absolutely ridiculous, because Tusk laid it on the line and said very simply in 20 minutes that destroyed both May, her government, and all the Brexiteers, Britain will not decide the terms of this agreement. The 27 members of the European Union will decide the terms. So it's that arrogance of the empire that has been laid bare here throughout this process.
Oh, we've got arrogance, and we'll up you your arrogance, right?
I'll see you, and I'll raise you to arrogance. Yes.
If you had a choice between to trade in Theresa May for Donald Trump, who would you take?
I'd actually keep Theresa May.
I don't blame you. I'd probably take her too.
She's not batshit crazy,
right? And Trump.
She's conniving, and she's very, very, very weak in terms of a prime minister. I mean, we used to call Margaret Thatcher the Iron Lady. This is the Tin Lady. And, you know, one of the fallouts as a matter of what happened just this past week is that we had a member of her backbench, a former leader of the Tory party, stand forward and say, well, we're probably going to have to fight then Spain for control of Gibraltar. Gibraltar is a British territory. It sits obviously at the mouth to the Mediterranean Sea. So just like Margaret Thatcher, Theresa May is ready to go and fight for control of more rocks. This one has a bunch of apes on it, like Maggie and the Falkland.
Right. Instead of sheep, you got apes. So Dennis Campbell, but I want to get to what's happening over there, because obviously there, you know, you've got your own Michigas going on. I'm always curious to know what the rest of the world is thinking about the insanity happening here. Obviously, you guys were as shocked as most of us were that this moronic madman won the election, that there are enough really stupid Americans who would vote for this idiot. The real travesty was that more people didn't vote than voted for either one of our two main candidates. And if those people had just voted against the more batshit crazy one, we wouldn't be in this position. But, you know, I need to keep my blood pressure down. But what are people in the UK thinking now that we've had, what, 70-some-odd days of this insanity here? Are you guys as freaked out and afraid as we are?
To a degree, yes. And to a degree, it's almost like watching a parody. There's not a single person here, a single news outlet that takes him seriously, but they know that he's ratings gold, just as they know over there. So when he speaks, the lunacy gets broadcast. And the good thing is that just like there, people are beginning to see it. as complete lunacy. You know, you mentioned Vox earlier in your broadcast today, and I think they're an absolutely wonderful outlet. Our friend Ezra Klein is, you know, a major contributor over there. And when you look at the way in which they did this piece on satire and how, you know, why is it that all the satirists seem to be the only one able to get to the truth and tell the news? I mean, they talked in their piece about Samantha Bee and John Oliver and, you
Stephen
know,
Colbert now Stephen, is back yeah, in yeah. a big way.
And Seth Meyers and Saturday Night Live has come back to life. And what they're, satirists have a way to cut through and get right to the truth of the matter, cut right to the heart of it like a knife. And once they're able to do that, you end up with a very raw dissertation, and they have absolutely no problem calling something bullshit. Whereas the mainstream media tends to be more nuanced in trying to find, you know, the left and the right and the middle ground and the discussion, and on one hand this, on the other hand that. And the mainstream media's biggest fault is that, with a few rare exceptions, like, for example, Jake Tapper, I believe even Chucky Todd grew some you know what's the other
yeah,
day.
You know, he goes
they're
back
starting
and forth.
To question and push back a little bit, but they need to push back a lot more. They're under much more constraints, and what happens is that the American public gets so tired of this left right BS, they tune out.
That's true.
And it's the satirists that actually, you know, hit right to the marrow of the bone and get things across. And I think the same thing happens here. We're seeing more and more shows like what we do on our podcast and others that are starting to, you know, seriously say, this is absolutely crazy. Do you know when Christiane Amanpour, the CNN foreign, now she's CNN International, keep that in mind. There's a big difference between CNN International and CNN US, just so the world knows
that.
She came on to Trevor Noah's show, The Daily Show, and she said something that was really telling about the way we need to look at news. We've got to stop this left, right, and start searching for truth. We've got to start calling BS when we clearly know it and hear it and see it. And I think if media starts to focus on truth, which is what they used to do 20, 30 years ago, instead of this, you know, how do we make everybody look good and have these, you know, I can't even contemplate some of these discussions with 8, 10, 12 people.
Oh, they're ridiculous. I can't watch those shows because, you know, what happens is they all wind up yelling over one another and nobody gets a word in edgewise. And they're ridiculous programs. And CNN is the worst when it comes to those things. But, you know, we are in such opposite world territory. I mean, you know, for years, Fox was the fake news channel. You know, I gave them the sounder years ago. They never took me up on it.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
You know, and so for Donald Trump to be pointing fingers at the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN, and it's fake news, anything that speaks of him in less than adulation kind of terms, he deems fake news. Fox News has been lying about stuff since its inception. So it's just...
I mean, he went after Andrea Mitchell yesterday. Yeah, I mean, Andrea Mitchell is... You know, she's the grand doyenne of the press corps. I mean, this woman has covered, what, 5, 6 different administrations, and they've all been pissed off at her, so she had to be doing something right.
Right.
And he called her fake news
of course.
Yesterday.
And what he does is he'll tweet, you know, and he uses Fox as his intelligence source. You know, he shuns the actual 17 intelligence agencies from all the major, agencies within the government. But anything from Fox, he deems, above reproach. I bring this up to mention there are more and more the mainstream media is coming about and calling, you know, the shill. The Los Angeles Times yesterday, I read the first of what I thought was a four-part editorial that started on Sunday. Our dishonest president. And I read, part one. Part two was why Trump lies. Part three was Trump's authoritarian vision. Part four, published today, was Trump's war on journalism. And I thought today was going to be the end of it. But today, they have grayed out part five and part six that are coming tomorrow and Friday. So they're really, they're going all in on this. And I'm telling you, if I had more time, I'd read the whole thing. I mean, I urge everyone to read, just Google LA Times editorial Trump, and they'll come up.
Well, you know, I'm very often when I come to the States, I go to the, I'm a member of the visiting member of the White House press corps. And to see that press room as packed as it is every time Chemical Spicer steps to the stand is just ridiculous. And to see the people who get questions that never, ever got questions before, and then to hear them is absolute insanity. I mean, you know, John Gizzi, I consider him to be a good friend, even though he's, you know, a right wing guy from the Daily Caller. He's a nice enough guy. But to see that he gets a question every single day over an ABC or a CBS or an NBC, and to see some of the, you know, the crazy outlets out there that are getting, you know, the ability to ask questions and just be mouth. And then they send out these daily, I mean, many times a day emails. And my favorite ones, not of course, are the ICMY, in case you missed it, I probably mixed the letter,
right,
in which it is pure 1930s pre-Nazi takeover propaganda. You know, all of the things that Donald Trump is doing right, dear leader is leading here and doing that, and take any one of his initiatives, and they cherry pick the quotes from all the right wing and they put them out there, and they expect everybody to then pick them up and then just take them and run with them. And it's laughable. I mean, yes, the press office, the White House press office, is a propaganda arm, but not to the extent at which it's being used right now. And it's been about 85 days of lunacy since the transition when they really started to crank these out. And
right.
It's just insane.
Right. And, you know, Fox, of course, is the biggest of the bunch, but there are a lot, you know, from Breitbart to Drudge to, you know, the rest of the loonies. InfoWars and all those, and that's who Trump trusts, which is frightening.
Yeah.
But you know, Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox, you know, he did his magic over there too on your media. So he hasn't only perverted the Fourth Estate here in the U.S., but in the U.K. as well.
Well, Fleet Street has always had its bad actors, even before him. I mean, you know, you have the this is where the real birth of the tabloid press was. You have the Sun, the Daily Mail, and, you know, these are papers that just out and out lie, just like Fox does as well. The real serious papers are, you know, people like The Guardian, which has got a tremendous U.S. operation and has been breaking a lot of big stories.
Yeah, but
there.
You know what? The Guardian U.S. looks like it's going to be folding soon. They're losing lot of money. A lot of money. Yeah, I think it's great. It is a shame because I thought they've been doing really good work. But I'm reading they're not too much longer for our world over here.
Oh, that's a shame because I thought, you know, some of the bounty that the New York Times and the Washington Post were bringing in from, you know, new subscribers online, et cetera. But to answer your question, how are people over here viewing him? You know, there's a giant a shrug mostly. If it doesn't affect their day-to-day life, they're not really that concerned until somebody points something out. And then they're like, you're kidding, right? No, this is dead serious. So when I go on to television and radio programs here and start talking about, you know, some of the things that are done, even the hosts are like, he did what?
Yeah.
Huh?
Right.
So, and the good news, I think, though, is that if you look across some of the elections that are going on right now in the rest of Europe, you know, the Netherlands rejected the hate agenda of Geert Wilders, which is big. It looks as though, despite best efforts and the craziness of France, Marine Le Pen will not win that election, but
from
she will still be a force to be reckoned with.
From your mouth to, you know, whatever powers in the universe there are, please.
Well, I think what people are finally seeing with, you know, Nigel Farage, who is best buddies with
Donald
your
Trump.
President.
Oh, yes.
I call him 45. I don't dare
Yeah,
say
I call
his
him
name.
Dump. It's a contraction. It's said with, you know, all the respect he is due. Donald Trump is D'UMP. It works, and it fits. So we just call him Dump for short. Yeah.
Well, I think what's happening though is that he's opened a lot of people's eyes. I mean, I just read a piece. I can't remember. I think it was in the New York Times this morning, saying that or maybe it was the Washington Post, one of the two, that progressive turnout in midterm elections has traditionally been abysmal.
Yeah.
And they're seeing all sorts of indications that this time around it's going to be huge.
Well, in Los
and going
Angeles,
into the 2020 census, this is the kind of stuff you want to see happening.
We
you
so
want
need
huge
it.
Turnout
we
and wins.
So need it. And the big test will be in a couple of weeks in Georgia, because there's a special election to replace Tom Price, who left Congress to be Dump's Health and Human Services Secretary. And we may very well get a Democrat in that seat because of this. But people need to show up and vote.
Well, they're saying the last poll I saw only had him at 43%, which is, I mean, for a Democrat in that part of the world is incredible.
It really is.
He's got to get to 50%.
Yep.
And once that happens, that sends a very strong message. This Gorsuch thing is also just an absolute disaster.
It's unbelievable. But this is what we're in for the next so many years. So so Dennis Campbell at UK Progressive on the Twitters, UK Progressive Magazine. Now, you're an American, but you've been living over there for how many years now?
I've been in Europe for almost 20 years now. Wow. 19 years, and been in the UK for 14 years. And you know, one of the downsides of all this, Brexit thing, is that I married a Dutch woman and have three half Dutch, half American kids. And we're not even sure if after this is all said and done, they're going to be able to stay. I mean, I'm a dual national, but it's really really hard. Or I've got to figure out how to pay £4,000, about $6,000, for passports for everybody.
So now you're an American British citizen. You're dual citizenship, but the rest of your family doesn't, so they may not be able to stay there.
Well, they do have dual nationality, but my kids were all born in the Netherlands, so they get Dutch by birth, they get American by birth. We're anchor babies,
right?
So in theory, the Dutch side was because we were members of the EU. Nobody ever thought much about this, and then all of a sudden. With the aftermath of Brexit, these are new concerns. I mean, are we going to be deported? Are we going to have, the equivalent of your ICE agent showing up on the door and saying, thank you, off to the Netherlands you go? And we just don't know how this is all going to work out. It's a two-year process, and there's likely to be another period of time where people, can sit and think and figure out what they're going to do. But my son turns 18 this year, so I've definitely got to move to get him a British passport.
Wow.
And we're just really struggling trying to figure out how to do this. And then, he's lucky in that he's going to end up with, probably in his life, three passports, a Dutch, a British, and an American. But what does that mean? I mean, we're entering this isolationist state. Then, the kids are the ones that are going to be suffering the most. I mean, I think anybody over 65 shouldn't be allowed to vote anymore because they make such stupid decisions.
Yeah, well, over here, I mean, look, if we're approaching 65, we're the ones who are going to get screwed if Dump is successful in repealing Obamacare. But I want to talk with you about what's happening there. So I'm looking at some of the notes you sent me on the impact of the Brexit vote. Obviously, what's going to happen with your family is one thing. One thing that stood out to me is you said EU doctors and nurses left the UK at an alarming rate over the last months. Now, I remember during the whole run-up to the election that the citizens over there were lied to. There were bus ads that said, all the money we send to the EU will now go into the National Health Service. And then after the election, they're like, well, that wasn't exactly true.
We were just kidding.
Right. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. Well, I think that wasn't so much the issue. I mean, if you look at the way, look in your own country at the number of doctors and specialists, I mean, you've seen it firsthand, that come from other countries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the ability of healthcare workers to move has always been a huge part of the NHS. It's been a part of every major national healthcare system around the world.
Mm-hmm.
People come to, from third world and other places and study, and they study in the UK, and then they join the National Health Service because it's world-renowned. Now what's happening is that you have a whole bunch of EU doctors and nurses that have said, you know what, it's too uncertain for me. I'm going to go to an EU country where I know I will always be able to work and live, etc. And the end result is a brain and a talent drain. We're seeing it happening at the university level. We're seeing it happen inside of universities with a number of foreign university applications. And those are the ones that end up having to pay the most money. So they're what keep universities here profitable. They're down by about 40% and projected to go even further down, because what use is there of getting a degree in the United Kingdom if you can't stay there when you're done? You're seeing that in the United States with the tightened visa requirements.
That's so right. And we're seeing,
human risks here.
Foreign applications to American universities down precipitously because people are going, well, I don't know if I'm going to get kicked out. I don't know if I want to be there. Look, if I lived elsewhere, if I lived somewhere else in the world, and always thought of, you know, moving to the U.S. or visiting for an extended time or going to school here, and Trump was elected president, I'd say, I'll go somewhere else, thank you very much. Who would want to be here under him?
Look at the impact of what Trump is having on your tourism market.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with the news of what he wants to do in terms of having every foreign visitor, not even ones that are coming in under questionable circumstances, give up their passwords, their social media accounts, give up their contact lists so that they can run them through databases. I mean, that's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. Who is going to say, well, yeah, I'm going to go take a holiday in the United States. Screw it. I'll go to Saint-Tropez or to Asia, or I'll go to some island down in Thailand. You know, I mean, it's just absolutely short-sighted nonsense.
You know, I used to joke about finding one of the discarded survivor islands and starting my own little country. Now I really want to do it.
Nicolandlia.
Right, Nicolandlia. Yes, that works for me. I'm there. You see what happened in Syria yesterday.
Oh.
And Assange, listening to Donald Trump's reaction is frightening. Listening to how he talks about, if China's not going to do anything about North Korea, we'll do it, and that's all I'm going to say. What the hell does that mean?
What the hell does that mean, indeed? I mean, you know, this is a man with a finger on the nuclear button, and, you know, the only way you're going to be able to stop North Korea is to blow them back into the third century with nukes.
Yep.
But then they're on the border with China. They're on the border with South Korea. It is not an easy solution. And, you know, you cannot walk around with bluff and bluster. You've already seen the impact of that in the Middle East. You know, well, it was because Obama was weak. No, it wasn't because Obama was weak. It was because Obama was prudent. He basically sat down and said to Congress, okay, fix this and give me the authority to do this. If this is what you want done, don't just pass the buck.
Right. And I was one of those saying, hell no, don't go to war. We don't want war. Right. And Donald Trump, by the way, tweeted at least four times to Obama, do not bomb, Assad. Don't go after him. Don't go to war. And now he's calling him weak and blaming this attack on Obama. It's just so insane. Now over here, there is this sort of Trump insanity. There's a psychological, I don't want to call it a mania, but there's an affliction going around. People are stressed, they're upset, they're depressed, and it all goes back to Trump's election. Are you having any of those kind of problems over there with the Brexit vote? Are people freaking out a little bit?
They're freaking out, but not to that extent. I mean, you have to remember the British resolve is to keep calm and carry
right.
on.
Right. Stiff upper lip.
You know, and I have to, it's one of the phenomenon of living in this country and seeing it firsthand after the 7/7 subway bombings a few years back before the Olympics, when the day in which they were awarded, and then seeing the reaction to the maniac driving across Westminster Bridge and killing four
yes.
or five people. Parliament was open the next morning. The attitude is, you know, screw you. You cannot stop us. You know, we will just, we'll take a punch and we'll stand right back up and be back in business the next day. There's a part, I think, of the mania in the U.S. that has happened since post 9/11, where we've got to have theme music and dramatic headlines and dramatic news every second of every single day. And that's just insanity.
It is. So what? How do you go through your daily? You just keep moving forward. It's not like you have a choice, right? That's sort of what we have to do here. Just put one foot in front of the other and deal with all the shit as it's flying by us. I mean, it seems every day there's 20 insane news stories, and it's like I don't know which way to turn anymore. And yeah. I wonder how much of it they're putting out there as diversions to keep us away. I mean, are you guys aware of the whole Russia intrigue thing that's going on?
Oh,
do you
yeah.
have any thoughts
yeah, it's,
on
it's
that?
It's very alarming because, I mean, they also impacted Brexit. You know,
and right.
so we're, you know, it is an issue. It is being discussed. Whether it gets to the level of inquiry, you know, where there's actual discussion beyond that, I don't know because of the current Tory government. You know, but it's one of those things where I think the world has become much more dangerous, but it's also become much more focused and alert so that these things cannot happen again. I mean, I have a tremendous amount of faith in human spirit and human nature because, you know, they've seen it before. What I worry about is the institutional memory that is being lost in places like the State Department. And as people who lived through the era of the Holocaust begin to die, or many have died, you start to lose those who have a real memory and remembrance of what it was like during that time period. And I think that's the real tragedy. We've got to keep people focused, and we've got to make certain they know that, you know, there is some huge downside risks here, and we've got to be prepared to stand up and be counted.
Most definitely. Dennis Campbell, find him at ukprogressive.co.uk. That's for the magazine. You can also find the Three Muckrakers podcast there, and we can find you on Twitter.
iTunes. We're on iTunes.
On iTunes. And at UK Progressive on Twitter. Dennis Campbell, it's always great to talk with you.
Oh, same here, Nicole.
You know, stay
so
strong.
So glad you're on the mend as well.
Thank you. Me too. And hopefully I'll get to, you know, stay covered under insurance. They're still trying to take it away from me. We're working on that one.
We're going to get you. We're going to get you taken care of.
Thanks, Dennis.
All the best.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye. And with that, we are done for the day. Tomorrow is Thursday, so Howie Klein will be with us here on the Thursday edition of the show. As always, thank you for hanging out. I will we'll see you tomorrow. I'll leave you with this one because it's the fitting song for a day like today and a year like this one. It's Widespread Panic, doing a song that was written by a guy named Phil Roy, covered by a number of people, but this is my favorite version. It's called Hope in a Hopeless World. Have a good one, everyone.
Tattered and worn. Mama's doing the best that she can. Takes hope in a hopeless world. The eldest son, he stayed in school. Listened to his mother, never drank or used. Yet every job he wants, he gets refused. Takes hope. We'll be right back.
Churches are full, but the prayers are not heard. Saturday's child don't want to go to Sunday school. Whatever happened